Route 616, your home for all Finn's Marvel main continuity. And yes, Bill, we really do have to do this one.
I didn't realize you were starting recording right when I said that.
We're keeping that in, fuck it.
Yeah,
just brought up the cover of Fantastic Four and realized how shit it is.
Bill was referencing this issue of Fantastic Four, issue number 20, by the way. So, hi guys. This is RJ here. I'm here with Bill.
Hey, how's it going?
And the
please
man...
bear with us to Amazing Spider-Man. It'll be worth it, I swear.
No, it won't. No, it really won't. Don't. He's lying. Don't
also with
to
us
him.
Is the. Also with us is the man who has a Spider-Man patch. It's Dan.
Oh my God! Are we going to talk about that? Are we seriously going to talk about that? You're going
to
do
behind
this
the scenes
live online.
For some behind-the-scenes insight, Dan got a
Marvel mystery
patches,
packet.
Marvel mystery packets with patches.
At the gas station.
There's 24 characters. There's 24 freaking characters, okay, in this little Marvel patch thing. It's just a little tiny patch. They're free. And you get one every time you make a purchase sort of thing. And it's great. It's really cute. And I looked at some of the 24 that they had, you know, like Thanos' glove, you know, Black Widow, Iron Man. There's all these really cool characters. And I thought, boy, wouldn't it be cool if I got like Black Widow or Thanos' glove or whatever. I'd settle for Thelma Dinkley for fuck's sakes. But no, I opened it up. It's freaking Spider-Man.
One of the best moments that's ever happened to our group chat.
I've done something wrong in my life, obviously somewhere, and I'm being punished by these two wankers. Anyway.
Just because we literally
laughed your asses off at me for like 2 days over it.
Yeah, just because we're literally now doling out comics partially on who can torment you the most with a given story.
You would never do that to me.
We're just
you?
Giving that away now, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Another little behind the scenes tidbit. We are recording this episode early, but we're I'll throw this up on Friday or something. But some scheduling stuff came up, so extra early episode. Yay. Getting
Yay.
This one out of the way.
Yeah,
we
boy,
all weren't
oh
expecting to be here tonight, so let's see how
we,
this goes.
We weren't. This is me.
So. For the entries we are covering today, we're going to start with Fantastic Four, issue number 20. Then we are moving over to X-Men, issue number 2. And we have Amazing Spider-Man, issue number 6. Arguably, possibly the only reason you have to be here. But it's still a good episode. It's actually pretty good stories in this for the most part.
There's only one story that I actually consider bad in this issue, in all honesty. Even the Model Kill Man isn't terrible, despite my complaining about it as we started.
Bill and I disagree on what the worst issue this week is, but we'll get to that. Journey to Mystery 98, A Story and C Story, and then Tales of Suspense 47.
Tales of Ba-ba-ba?
Yeah.
I never heard of that one.
It's that type of day.
Be nicer, we'll take Iron Man away from you and make you discuss the Cobra.
I will easily do that.
You wouldn't do that
you
to
think
me.
I want to talk about the Cobra?
I've had enough disappointment from Marvel this
I'm
week.
I'm being nice to you
Thank
this week,
you.
Dan.
Okay. Between She-Hulk episode 4 and or 5 or whatever the hell it was.
I thought you were stopping watching that show because it was bad.
This was the end of my She-Hulk run. I can't take any more.
There's probably like one more episode.
There's only one episode left. You're going to end
what,
up watching
it. What,
it's only
six freaking episodes?
I don't
All
know.
All their shows
I'm
have been
guessing.
Six episodes.
It's either six or like eight, maybe.
I don't know. It's just,
I'm pretty sure it's supposed
oh
to be
my
six.
I thought it was pointless. It was just pointless.
I was sure you were stopping after three.
For a She-Hulk suit.
I was sure you were stopping after three. Why the fuck did you watch two more episodes?
There was a reason. What the hell was it? Oh, somebody brought it up in a conversation I was having about She-Hulk, and I kind of went in to see what they were talking about and ended up watching the bloody thing, because it's only like, the episodes are only like 20, 25 minutes long.
Right. All right, so here's what we have to do.
What? What?
One of us has to bite the bullet and look up some spoilers for She-Hulk episode 6, And then we start talking about it with Dan, and he'll watch the entire episode.
I fucking hate both of them.
Can you believe they did blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, I know, right?
They don't even have to be true. He won't realize we're lying until he's already watched the episode.
Yeah, like,
all you people out there.
It's pretty amazing that they brought in Ghost Rider in the final episode of She-Hulk.
Nicolas Cage looked really good, though. For his age, I thought he did great. For all you people out there in, audience land, is suffering through this podcast, these two
we pray for you
are not going to stop. They're just not. I can guarantee I'm going to get stuck with a goddamn Spider-Man comic at some point before the end of the month. I can just see it.
I can guarantee that's not going to happen because I don't trust you with it.
And he's on the cover of it.
Second,
how can we not give him the comic when he's on the cover?
I swear to Christ.
Anyways, we're gonna get on track a little bit here and start this Fantastic Four issue. Don't worry, we'll tease Dan more later.
That's very sweet of you.
Fantastic Four issue number 20, The Mysterious Molecule Man, by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Of course, Dick Guyer is here. The ink. We got George Russo's on the covers. Stan Goldberg on colors. Artie Simic on letters. August 1963 release. A full 22-page story. And off I go, taking us to meet the Molecule Man.
Yeehaw.
The issue opens up with Reed conducting experiments and everybody else asking what the fuck's going on.
What are you doing, Reed?
It's nice that the splash panel is on target or on topic for once.
What are you doing, Dave?
So, I don't even know if this ties into the actual story, so I'm kind of just glancing here.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
No, okay, we'll skip over it then. We go a few pages
to... Because the blue fireball has nothing to do with the meteor.
Yeah, no.
The fireball is important. We can't skip that.
Yeah, a fireball comes out of this big meteorite.
It just appears in town.
And then out of the blue fireball... On page 4, the Fantastic Four go into the blue fireball, and they are reunited with the Watcher, who we met last when we met the Red Ghost and his apes. I forgot the Red Ghost name for a second there. So, the Watcher reminds them that he is forbidden to interfere with people of other planets.
Well, he's interfering with people of other planets.
Yes, pretty much.
The Watcher is really bad at his job.
But the danger is so grave that that it might even destroy my own race, he says. So he is here to warn them about a man who has the power to destroy galaxies, worlds, yes, even universes. And this is the man we will come to know, the villain we will know to come as Molecule Man, who we are introduced to before he gains his powers, and we see him gain his powers in the experiment gone wrong as he was working on whatever the fuck. He's a lab technician working on some big kind of atomic weapon, and an accident happens. He gets shot with the atomic rays, and now he has these grandiose abilities.
Stan didn't even know what he was doing.
Yeah,
he's literally just described as working with dangerous atomic devices.
Yeah. So they split apart from one another once again, and then we see the Molecule Man is here to menace the streets of New York. In fact, he is at the Baxter Building.
He's taken the Baxter Building.
He has taken the Baxter Building
and put
over.
It in Times Square.
And yes, right in the middle of Times Square. the Fantastic Four try to attack the Molecule Man, but very quickly they are proven to be useless against him at the moment.
As opposed to any other time in their careers where they're pretty much useless. Again. Always. But it's okay, because a Molecule Man will fall in love with Sue. Or whatever her name is.
Fortunately, they don't go that route.
Yeah, thankfully.
Really?
I'm a little surprised they showed the restraint, but I think they do have Namor in like 2 issues again, so.
Oh, so they were setting it up for Namor. Okay.
And there's somewhere in here somebody makes a joke about Bela Lugosi, so because I have a note that Molecule Man is played here by Bela Lugosi, so I think Finn makes a joke because he's always doing that. It's just Molecule Man thwarting them for a good amount of pages.
This is just a fight for like 10 pages.
It's just a big old fight, and it's actually pretty fun. This actually really bumps the issue up, but it's just there's not much to talk about.
If they did more stuff around Stan trying to explain the Molecule Man's powers, it would be far worse than just having them fighting him for like 10 pages.
Yeah, no, this is the way better alternative. It's actually, there's a point in here where it's, I wrote a line out in my notes that I never thought, never did I ever think that I would write this in my notes, but I even say, here's my exact word, never thought I'd say this. Thank God the Human Torch was here, as he actually is very helpful here.
I thought I knew you, Ryan. I did.
He probably wrote that when he surrounded Molecule Man by fire.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. He helps distract Molecule Man.
The Fantastic Four can escape on the subway.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't like defeat the Molecule Man from it, but you know, they got away.
I'm not being mean when I say that they're literally on the subway.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
darkest
New York,
day
brother.
And brightest light. No evil can escape Human Torch's light.
God damn it!
By the power of Grayskull, I don't know. Yeah, the Orange Lantern.
The Orange Lantern era is kind of over with Human Torch, thankfully.
Really? Is it? You're not just playing with
me. I feel
me
like
here.
You just bullshit it to me. No, but anyways.
His last couple of appearances, he hasn't made anything out of fire that's unbelievable.
He brings it back a bit, I think. I've read some shit since. they actually receive help from a Yancey Street member here, which is hilarious, as it's Finn's greatest rivals. And then they go even see Alicia, and they use Alicia they want to use her modeling ability that she got from her evil stepfather, the Puppet Master, so we think she molds clay figures of the Fantastic Four, but it turns out she just actually molded the Fantastic Four with clay. she put clay all over them. And this is where the Hulk is arfifisting, because the Fantastic Four get to stay gray when they need to. They attack a clay-bound Fantastic Four members, attack Molecule Man, and they realize that, wait, if we just take that wand from this fucker, maybe he won't be so powerful, which turns out to be true. And then Watcher is like, oh, remember when Watcher said he doesn't interfere? Well, he interferes here because he just fucking scoops up Molecule Man into his blue fireball, and then the issue ends pretty much.
And we never see Molecule Man again.
He's been reduced to molecules.
Yeah, so interesting issue.
No, it's not.
Gave it three stars.
Really?
The fight really carries it, though.
This is entirely on the strength of the fight and just some of the interactions with the team.
And the stunning art. Yeah.
The art actually for Jack Kirby art was pretty good for here.
I hate the way he did the Molecule Man's face.
Yeah, I mean, the Molecule Man is awful, but besides that, and the Marvel Unlimited version of the fucking Clay Fantastic Four.
Well, at least the villain isn't dressed in green. Oh, wait.
Molecule Man next appears in Marvel 2 and 1, number 1.
Let me have this. Molecule Man is never seen again.
it's a good thing he's never had a important event revolve around him in the last 7 years or so. Oh, excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that would be
years.
Bad.
Last decade, you know. Good thing that's never happened. Did you say you're rating, or did I fucking block you?
No? I said a 3.
Okay, we both have 3.
Not going to bother rating this one because it's just... It's Fantastic Four. Who cares?
Fair enough, honestly. There's some rough Fantastic Fours coming up.
Oh, we're like the comic version of the latest movie?
I don't think they get quite that bad until into the 130s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, we're good for a while there. On to X-Men issue number 2. No one can, I couldn't even fucking get through the title looking at who this is about. No one can stop the Vanisher. This is this is Stanley and Jack Kirby comic again. Paul Reinman is inking this one. Pretty good. Paul Reinman's pretty decent. Sam Rosen's on letters. I'm really hitting my speech impediments, been coming out all day. September 1963 release date, a never full page story. And Danny Boy.
Oh, okay.
This one's
mine?
Yeah.
Okay. First question. They have a brief summary, which is about,
oh God,
say 12 lines. And they have a detailed summary, which is about 3 times longer. Which do you want?
What are we feeling here, Dan?
I'm throwing it out there. I'll do whichever one.
I'd probably do the brief because
you can do the brief one. We can add
this
on.
This comic is Danger Room shenanigans.
Okay.
Yeah. Just do the brief one and we can add on if you really miss some important shit, which is unlikely. This comic kind of...
Nothing happens in this comic.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, that's why you gave it to me. Okay.
We don't really need to talk about the Vanisher if you want.
Okay, we'll do the brief summary of... What is it? No One Can Stop the Vanisher, as opposed to the title on the cover, which is Nothing Can Stop the Vanisher. Nice continuity there, guys.
Imagine Marvel switching their titles. Never happened.
No, right? I mean, my God. Okay, brief summary coming up. Professor Xavier telepathically orders his students to return to the school. Where were they, first of all?
All over the city.
Doesn't matter.
Why were they in class?
So that they can do the old Fantastic Four gimmick of having everyone use their superpowers to get to the meeting and showcase the powers.
Makes perfect sense. I'm okay with
this
that.
Comic out Fantastic Four is Fantastic Four.
Yeah, this is just the first 10 issue of Fantastic Four, really.
Okay. Once they return to the mansion, Professor Xavier informs them that there is a new supervillain with mutant powers calling himself the Vanisher. Earlier in the day, he had robbed the National Bank by using his teleportation powers to escape from the bank's security guards. Xavier sends his students off on extra training missions to prepare them for the upcoming fight with the Vanisher. Okay. That's
the 10 pages of Danger Room shenanigans I mentioned.
Okay. I mean, it's taking a lot for granted here, but we'll run with this. Meanwhile, the Vanisher announces his intent to steal the Pentagon's defensive plans. Defensive plans to the U.S., I guess? Alongside his
presumably, they're no clearer in the actual comic.
Oh, that's great. Alongside his newly formed crime organization. Criminal. Organized crime. We're good.
They brought him a fruit basket. They're nice criminals.
Well, it's very sweet, actually. I kind of like that. Professor Xavier receives word from his FBI informant, Agent Fred Duncan, that the Vanisher...
I forgot he had an FBI informant in this.
Duncan becomes important later.
Oh, yeah, shit. Yeah. He opens a chain of donut stores, doesn't he?
Oh, for fuck's sake. I'm pretty sure it's the first appearance of the Sentinels that Duncan's pretty pivotal in.
Oh, I thought he was the one who opened the donut stores where the liberals rape little children and then eat them. Or no, that was pizza shops. Okay, never mind. Maybe it's the I can't tell.
Your joke just completely bombed because you confused fast food.
Whatever. Yeah. That's okay. So Agent Fred Dunkin' Donuts, that the Vanisher is now preparing to make his move. How in the hell would they know? The X-Men are asked to stop the Vanisher, so Professor Xavier sends them out to Washington, D.C. The Vanisher steals the defense plans from the Pentagon, but is quickly surrounded by the X-Men. After a short battle, the Vanisher is able to escape with the plans. Wow. They didn't do very well, did they?
No.
The next day, the Vanisher appears once again and demands that he be given $10 million. Otherwise, he will sell the defense plans to the country's enemies, like Canada and Nicaragua and Paraguay and England. Anyway, a day later, the Vanisher and his criminal army appear in front of the White House to pick up their money, but find the X-Men waiting for them instead. Professor Xavier appears from behind his students and uses his powers to prevent the Vanisher from teleporting away by making him lose his memory. That's lame. With their leader rendered harmless, the criminals are easily defeated by the X-Men. And that's your summary.
Yeah, the short summary was fine for this story.
So basically, it's like Indiana Jones. The X-Men served no freaking purpose in this story whatsoever.
No, it's entirely Xavier. This is a trope for a while where the X-Men show up and have a bunch of pointless fights, and then Xavier just, like, comes and mind wipes the villain, and that's the end of the story.
There's a reason Xavier's the only one I've had in the thumbnail so far.
Uh-huh. And that would be it. Or has he wiped our minds and we've forgotten as well?
I wish he'd make me forget this comic. It's not only boring, but it's also kind of bad.
I wish he'd make me forget this whole run so far. X-Men's been a big disappointment. Saying that, I've given them... I have to admit, I'm letting my biases creep through with this series so far, because realistically, I would have given both of these first two issues a 2, but I keep letting myself boost it up to 3, because it's the X-Men, and I like the X-Men.
I did give this issue a 2.
I gave this one a 3 still.
Really?
Honestly, besides some of the Vanisher shenanigans, I still recall more of this one than the first issue with Magneto. Yeah. So,
see, I'd say the Vanisher's actually probably the best part of this issue.
Well, that's what I mean. I think Vanisher
not
was
good.
Weirdly a better, job as
both
the villain than
missing
Magneto.
The most obvious uptick on this comic. The villain isn't dressed in green.
I was waiting for you to point that out.
He's a bad guy.
He's not dressed in green, but he's got one of the worst costumes I've ever fucking seen in my goddamn life.
Yeah, but how do they know he's a bad guy if he's not wearing green?
Good question.
They don't. That's how he kept escaping.
Well, that's how he vanishes into the crowd.
Yeah, he's not wearing green, so everyone's like, well, no villain here.
Yep.
After reading
we'll just let this old man in the orange jumpsuit walk off with his armload of money that I'm sure he got in a completely legitimate manner.
Well, obviously, or he'd be wearing green.
Yeah. After this, we might be able to agree that we wish the Vanisher would disappear. Yeah. So, Vanisher won't appear again until issue 37.
Oh, is he vanished?
He's disappeared for a while.
Oh, dear. So disappointed. Such a great comic. I mean, riveting action.
I mean,
who knew that?
Fortunately, we have something good coming up next. And not only does it features a villain who also doesn't wear green.
I was going to say, I mean, Vanisher gets his time to shine when he appears in Deadpool 2. But yeah, Spider-Man's up next.
Yeah,
I wasn't going to spoil it. Yeah, and the villain wears purple.
Spider-Man doesn't wear purple.
I mean, he is green. But we're getting there. We're making progress.
Amazing Spider-Man issue number 6. Face-to-face with the Lizard.
Is that what we're doing here? Spider-Man 6?
Yeah.
Yep. Face-to-face with the Lizard.
And this one has some key moments from one of your favorite characters, Dan.
Stanley Steve Ditko.
The Goblin?
No, not yet, Jonah.
An evergreen guy.
Oh, Jake Jonah. No. Yeah, my personal. Oh, now this is an iconic cover,
here.
Actually.
Yeah, this is one of the most iconic Spider-Man covers.
Wow. It's nice, but the villain's green, of course.
But he's not wearing green.
No, but he is green. So he can wear whatever freaking color he wants, because everything goes with green.
He's a human lizard. He's a human lizard. He doesn't have to wear anything, really. We're lucky he's wearing anything.
The comic code says he still has to wear pants.
So he can hide his little lizard willy. I'm just saying.
Yep. So this is all Stan Lee and Steve Ditko besides the letters done by Artie Simek. August 1963 release. 21 page story. And I'm handing this one off to Bill. Oh. There may be a reason for that.
I'm going to slowly slip you have into some a moments in coma here.
Oh, don't worry. We have some Jonah moments to keep you out of it.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
You got to keep awake for this.
So this comic opens with a splash page that's pretty good conceptually, but really demonstrates that Steve cannot draw crocodiles. And then we dive into the actual story, where we see a humanoid lizard in a lab coat and purple pants he's stolen from the Hulk, rampaging through the Everglades and menacing people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, these people go and report back to the news, and so all the newspapers pick up the story and claim, and the Bugle escalates things and challenges Spider-Man to go defeat him. And so Peter Parker sees this on the newspaper and figures that that's not a bad idea, but he's a broke high schooler, so there's no way he can afford to go to Florida. So he tries to talk Jonah into sending him to photograph the lizard. But Jonah doesn't believe the lizard's real. So he basically tells Peter he's not paying for him to have a Florida vacation to go chase rumors.
I have to say, before you go any further, this story is 10 times better when you keep in mind that all of this lizard shit takes place in Florida. It is fantastic.
Everything that happens in it makes perfect sense in that context.
It makes perfect sense, like Bill just said, when you keep in mind this takes place in fucking Florida. Yeah.
And then Peter leaves, he flirts a bit with Jonah's secretary, who now has a name, Betty.
Oh, hello, Betty.
This is the first time Betty Brant is named. And then Peter goes to the Natural History Museum with Flash and Liz. And while he's there, he sees a couple of guys who are deciding to rob the Natural History Museum. So he sneaks off, transforms into Spider-Man, and arrives just as the villains have pulled their guns on Liz. And he saves her, knocks out the bad guys, flirts with her a bit, and leaves, and then returns as Peter. And Betty has absolutely no interest in him or Flash, because she is now madly in love with Spider-Man. And following this little interview... this little interlude, Spider-Man hears an interview on the radio where the press is starting to wonder why Spider-Man has dodged the lizard and is he afraid of it. So he decides he really needs to get Jonah to pay for him to go to Florida. So as Spider-Man, he goes to Jonah's office and webs him to the ceiling. And not like completely to the ceiling, he just has him hanging from like a line of webbing like halfway down. And then tells Jonah that Jonah will have to hang around on his own because he's going to Florida to fight the lizard. And it would sure be nice, a shame if, you know, there was no press to cover that. And so he leaves and he's on the next building turning into back into Peter. And we hear Jonah yelling through the window about how he needs... how Betty needs to call Parker at once to go get the photos of the Spider-Man fighting the lizard.
Okay.
But before she does that, she really needs to get some cushions to put under him.
Okay.
And so she leaves to follow his directions, and we hear a very loud thump, followed by Jonah yelling to never mind about those fucking cushions. As the webbing dissolves and he falls 4 feet from where he was hanging from the ceiling.
Uh-huh. It's that pesky Spider-Man again. What a menace.
And
but his aunt's pretty hot.
Okay,
not Otto. Here.
She looks like Marisa Tomei. Yeah,
Dan the Gilf Hunter.
Is this Otto's new secret identity? Is he actually just Dan?
Could be. Don't know what you're talking about.
Next thing we know, you're going to try to marry Aunt May for a nuclear power plant on an island in Kenda.
Maybe. Is that bad?
Well, when it blows up and kills Hammerhead, it is.
Hammerhead? Who the hell is Hammerhead?
He's one of Spider-Man's less classic villains.
Apparently, I've never even heard of him.
His gimmick is he has a metal plate in his head.
Oh,
and it's really square.
Like the people that wrote this goddamn comic.
I walked into that one.
You did. You're gonna be all right, and... there, Ryan.
This podcast is in the mud.
I know.
And it ever isn't.
Has there ever been a moment, really, Ryan? Has there ever been a moment where we were lucid and, like, original and, you know, informative?
I mean, I'd say we're original.
I figure,
but...
our audience is going to be based entirely around enjoying the cattiness.
Or people who
and
really...
Black Cat doesn't even show up for another 20 years.
Yeah. No, insomniacs need to get to sleep and just put the podcast on and black out 5 minutes later, you know.
Speaking of exactly 5 minutes later, Peter turns up back in. That's actually the caption on the next panel. It worked out perfect.
Nice segue.
Peter turns up back in Jonah's office and starts flirting with Betty until Jonah comes out and yells at him about how he's decided to send him to Florida to try to get some pictures of the lizard and Spider-Man if he's man enough
to
show up.
Isn't it?
Well, if we keep getting distracted by you complaining, yes.
This sucks. Finish it.
We're not even in Florida yet.
God help me. I'm being punished for something. I don't know what I'm being punished for something.
Peter asks, when? I can go slower if you want, Dan.
You are such a spaceball.
Thank you. So anyway, Peter asks Jonah when he's leaving, and Jonah tells him to pack because we're leaving as soon as possible. And Peter's shocked, but Jonah doesn't trust him to not fuck it up, so Jonah's going with him.
Smart.
And so Peter goes home to get permission from Aunt May to go to Florida with a creepy old man to chase a humanoid lizard. And Aunt May is unsurprisingly skeptical about this plan until she hears that Jameson is going with him. And she figures he'll take good care of Peter, so he's free to go with his, quote, big fat guardian angel, as Peter puts it. And so Peter and Jonah hop on an airplane, fly to Florida, and Peter's reading a paper where he learns about a reptile expert that might be able to help him dealing with this lizard, a Dr. Curtis Connors. So they arrive in Florida. Peter immediately ditches Jonah to go and buy some film, turns into Spider-Man, and heads off to meet with Connors. And as soon as he shows up at Connor's house near the Everglades, he gets attacked by the lizard. They fight a bunch, and Spider-Man eventually gets thrown clear of the battle and just keeps going to Connor's house to talk to him, where he meets Connor's family and learns that the lizard is in fact Connor's, who had lost an arm in the war and had started researching lizards because of their regenerative properties, and he made a serum, as one does in comics, and tested it on himself, and his arm did grow back, but then he turned into a giant human lizard hybrid and ran off into the Everglades to raise an army and take over the world. And after Spider-Man learns this, he goes to leave their house and discovers that Connor's son, Billy, had headed outside to play and got menaced by a swamp. Fuck. You're rubbing off on me, Ryan. He got menaced by a snake, and the lizard was in the tree line, but is too far away to save him. Fortunately, Spider-Man does save him. And Spider-Man fights with the lizard some more, and drives him back into the swamp, and goes back into Connor's house, finds his notes on making a serum to turn him back human, and makes the serum himself. The lizard shows up, they fight again, and Spider-Man gets trapped under a bunch of rubble from a wall that the lizard knocked down. But this is utterly meaningless, because he immediately escapes, gets the serum back, and heads into the Everglades to try to find the lizard, who he locates in an old conquistador fort. He takes some pictures of the lizard monologuing to his army of poorly drawn crocodiles about how they're going to take over the world by him dumping some sort of chemical into the swamp to turn all the lizards into his hyper-intelligent allies. You say anything, I'm aware crocodiles are reptiles. Stan, however, is not.
Uh-huh.
I just sure hope he doesn't turn all the crocodiles gay.
That's the frogs. That's a different problem.
Now, Bill, you said if I stopped talking, you would go faster.
And I've made 10 pages since then. We're almost done.
Please, yes. He's got yes.
Anyway, Spider-Man
no, finish.
Fights with...
Finish, Bill, finish.
So back to page 14. Spider-Man makes the serum to turn lizard human.
You asshole.
I can keep this up. So anyway, where we actually left off, Spider-Man confronts the lizard one last time. They fight for a while until Spider-Man manages to pour the serum down Connor's throat, and he turns back human and returns with Spider-Man to his home, where he destroys his notes on the lizard serum, and they decide to keep things secret because he hadn't actually committed any crimes yet. He had just gone to the jungle and been a big scary lizard. Peter heads back to, I guess it's supposed to be Orlando, where Jameson is filing a police report on his missing photographer, and Peter shows up and he's like, hey, I've been looking for you. I bought these pictures of the lizard off a hobo. We can print them. And Jonah's like, those are definitely fake. Why do you waste good money on them? And he rips up the photos, and they fly back to New York without any photos. And Peter decides to celebrate his arrival back at in New York by phoning up Liz and asking her out for a date, but she can't go out with him or talk on the phone with him because she's waiting for a phone call from her dream man, Spider-Man. And Spider-Man laments the fact that, or Peter laments the fact that he can't get a date because he's cock-blocked himself. And Jonah gets a letter from Spider-Man from Florida telling him that he enjoyed his Florida vacation, and gets really angry and swears that he'll get that mask menace if it's the last thing he does. And then we get the tease for the next episode that features a suspiciously Dan-shaped silhouette.
Could it be the Goblin?
The end.
Or the Vulture?
Yes.
Which one do I keep making fun of you for looking like?
All of them.
Okay, fair.
From Gilligan.
Particularly because you're old.
Oh, fine, be like that.
And that's the end of the comic, so you can stop complaining now.
Okay, thank you. This sucked. Actually, you know what? I do like the lizard. I think he's a great villain. The doctor slash lizard, etc. I've always thought he was one of the best villains for Spider-Man.
Lizard is a great villain.
I do like Lizard. I highly enjoyed this. This is one of my favorite fins we've read in the whole order so far. Saying that, I did only give it 4 stars. I really try not to let my Spider-Man bias push me to 5 stars all the time or any fin, so I kind of nitpick sometimes. But this could have been argued for a 5-star. I settled on 4.
I will.
Of course you will.
I think it's
I gave it a 5.
It's a good solid 2. Maybe 2.5.
Okay, coming from you, that's actually not too bad.
Yeah, we'll take that.
But that's all based on the villain. Because
I'm sure we'll reach 3 once Green Goblin appears.
Right, and thank God Jameson was there. A little Peter Wanker would have died. So,
I mean Jameson,
this comic would be nothing.
Jameson's subplot kind of becomes...
This was one of the best Jameson comics, actually. They had a lot of great moments with him.
The comic would be nothing without him.
Spider-Man webbing him to the ceiling and then him falling was hilarious. Him trying to babysit Peter and immediately losing him was hilarious.
See how hard he tries to be a nice guy and the crap that Spider-Man puts him through? This is ridiculous.
Did you point out Spider-Man's criminal activity in this issue, by the way?
Which one?
Maybe, which one were you referencing?
He stole a newspaper.
No, I kind of breezed over that.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, he stole a newspaper
to
find out about the lizard stuff going on in
Florida. Did he actually steal it? I know he had read it, but I don't know if he actually took it.
I have that he stole it in my notes, so I hope he did.
Yeah, I think it was a little unclear. He definitely webbed up and read it, but I don't think they ever explained if he put it back or not. So yeah, that counts.
That's why I considered it the stealing, I think. It was, thank God that... thank God Peter just happened to know what color the serum would turn when it was successful, too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was some bullshit Deus Ex Machina. But, I mean, if I'm going to start penalizing things on Stan's understanding of science, we're in for a long, rough stretch of the order.
Yeah. Best we move on now to Journey into Mystery number 98. So we're going to the A story here. Challenged by the Human Cobra because it's fucking Reptile Month. Let's go.
No more talking monkeys.
This one's by Stan Lee and Don Heck. Great to see ya.
Wow, that's a bad cover.
Jack Kirby and George Russo's on the cover. And already Simic gun letters. September 1963 release. So this is technically a month after.
Don't look too close at Jane.
Now I can't stop looking. That's a 13-page story. And
Hammerhead's head.
I'll be taking this one. Okay, now I gotta pull this up and see this now. I gotta pull it up anyway so I can talk about it, but like...
And by the way, last issue, when I asked how long until Jane turns back up, I bet neither of you had the cover of the next issue.
I didn't. I thought first page.
Yeah, and to be honest, they actually hold out for almost an entire issue before she's officially back, but she does turn up 2 panels in. That's in flashback, though.
Okay, let's see. Fuck. I may turn on the... Oh my god, she's Hammerhead. Anyways, we open up this story with Thor as Thor, and he's going on a fucking rampage because he's goddamn angry because Odin won't let him. He's lost Jane because Odin won't let him marry a human, and he's very, very upset. We get a flashback to just last issue where Jane walked out on Don Blake.
Well, even superheroes need a little boom bada boom, you know? It was not fair.
No one's going to comment on the fact that he keeps a framed portrait of himself as Thor on his desk.
No.
What? Seriously?
Yeah, I'm not joking. He smashes it with his walking stick in his rage about how he's not allowed to date Jane because he's a god.
Yeah, it's on the second page. It's the second panel of the second page. Where we see it. He returns to Asgard, and Odin says he can sense the grief on Thor, and he says, "I sure hope you've put all the thoughts of that human Jane out of your mind." And Thor is like, "No, father, that I can never do." So we go back to Earth, where we meet this fucker. What's your name?
Schektor.
Schektor is the professor.
Yep.
Who he ends up killing here.
Oh, that's sweet of him.
When he becomes the Cobra, because he turns on his professor. And whoever... Oh, look, the Indian characters are less racist in my version. Nice.
That's good, because in mine, they are brilliant, brilliant yellow.
Yes, they are very racist in Bill's version.
And I'm pretty sure I have the recolored, like, Marvel Unlimited version, because that's not original newspaper coloring.
And, so, what is that guy's name? Where are you? He's the assistant to Professor...
No, they actually give Cobra's
Claus
name.
Voorhees?
Oh, yeah, it's Claus, that's it. Claus is the assistant to Professor Schektor. He unleashes the Cobra in a,
No Claus
in a
for
plan
alarm.
To... He lets the Venom kill his mentor, Professor Schektor, but he has antidote to save himself.
Yeah,
but
the plan was if they were both bit, no one would suspect that it was deliberate murder.
Exactly. So, Thor makes it to Schektor in time, and Schektor is able to tell his story as he's dying. It's implied he ends up dying. Claus is bitten, but it all goes wrong because Schektor just now reveals, after all the time doing experiments, that the Cobra was radioactive. So
you'd think he would tell his assistant that has to work with said radioactive Cobra that, you know, maybe wear some rubber, like, lead gloves or something when you handle it.
Nah. So Claus has been turned into a human with Cobra-like abilities.
Claus in effect.
Oh, fuck you.
I already don't like this comic.
So far, it's not that bad.
Yeah, oh, come on.
I this one's actually not bad.
I disagree. I don't like this one. I hate the Cobra. Cobra, he goes to menace some businessmen. He hates the corporate world.
Oh, I like him even more.
I don't
more.
Know what his actual goal is here. I don't care. he is threatening these businessmen. He's like, "Yo, obey my every order or else." What's his goal here? He wants to manufacture gallons of Cobra serum to make
artificial Cobra serum.
Lizard came first, but Cobra had the plan first. I see. So, Cobra and Thor engage a battle. Cobra actually gets the upper hand, which makes me depressed. But Thor comes back before Cobra shuts that down real fast. and ties Thor, wraps Thor around with some twine. Snake wrap is what he calls it, and then he throws Thor at the fucking window, and Thor turns back to Don Blake. Thor turns to Don Blake and goes to grab his hammer, which he had dropped, so Don Blake is able to sneak his way back inside, pick up the hammer, and become Thor again, with Cobra being confused as how the fuck did Thor get back.
So he survived the fall out the window.
Somehow. As Don Blake,
presumably he was still Thor when he hit the ground.
He has a minute as before he turns back, so it's implied. They only show him as Don Blake when he's on the ground, so you can really just make it up in your imagination how that went.
Kind of like the entire story.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is where, because of the cowardly, that's his name, Dr. Andrews, because of Dr. Andrews being so cowardly in this confrontation, this is when Jane decides to leave his ass. But then Cobra goes to kill Jane, and Thor saves her, because, you know,
that's
what's going to happen. But he doesn't save her for long, as Cobra takes her hostage once again, and then leaves the building and makes his way towards a bridge with Jane in tow. He makes it over. I think they're still, yeah, they're still in the building. They don't even make it to the bridge to show in a panel. But Thor makes it over, kicks Cobra right in the head. Jane is dropped, and Thor catches Jane. And this is when Jane officially leaves Dr. Andrews, like, I'm going back. I'm going to return to a real man and ask him for forgiveness. Beg him to let me work for him again, if he'll have me. So this is where he's going to go back to Don Blake. And she does, as we see it on the next panel. They reunite. And then Thor just kind of forgot about Cobra, and Cobra escapes. Yay.
Yeah, this was a completely fine story.
I don't like this one. I gave it 2.
I gave it 3.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
It's no better or worse than your average Thor story. It's just another gimmicky villain.
Yeah,
same sort of stuff happens.
Thor's in the mud.
I give it a 3. I would. I give it a 3.
Why,
because it's
why are you giving this shit a 3 and you're fucking, ooh.
Fucking
you're Spider-Man.
You're fucking
your
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man
sucks.
Bias is... Oh.
Oh, is it showing? Blush.
Let's move on to the C story.
The C story?
Odin battles Ymir. Can't... What?
Tales of Asgard?
We got a Tales of Asgard story.
Ooh,
Odin battles Ymir, king of the ice giants. And it's a 5-pager, of course. Jack Kirby, I guess, doing art here, so that's cool. And this one's for Bill to quickly.
I will say Don Heck spent a lot more care inking this than he spent inking the fucking Thor story.
Yeah, the splash page is really nice.
The art is
pretty bad, but like everything else is really good.
I mean, Kirby's doing the main art here, and
who did the colors on this? I like it.
I don't know. They weren't always listening colors back then.
Yeah.
And I've got the Marvel Unlimited recolored version anyway, I don't know what the original coloring looked like. Generally, if you get like big monocolor blotches for all the panels, it's the recolored version because they digitally colored it with like a soft video, like image editing software, so they just autofill.
Sure.
Anyway, this opens with the aforementioned gorgeous splash panel of an ice giant menacing a group of Vikings around their town. And yeah, the ice giant's bad, but at this point in the era, no one can draw monsters, so I can't really fault that. Anyway, our story actually opens in Odin's castle, which he has acquired since the end of the previous issue. And he decides it's time for him to intervene in the war between the Aesir and the Ice Giants. And it's time for him to destroy them. So he gets in a chariot pulled by a couple of Pegasi. And flies to the battlefield where all the gods are fighting with the Ice Giants. And he starts flinging lightning bolts at the Ice Giants.
That's rude.
And they cower for a bit, but then try to fight back by all blowing at once, releasing a huge gust of wind, hurling Odin from his chariot. So he lands on top of a mountain and pulls out his sword and hacks a giant chasm in the ground. And all the ice giants fall into the chasm, except for their king, Ymir. And he throws a giant icicle at Odin, destroying the mountain Odin's on. And so Odin runs and lures Ymir to a very specific spot in a volcanic area of, I guess this is supposed to be part of Asgard. They're not real clear as to what happens on Midgard and what happens on Asgard at this point. And Odin sticks his sword in the ground and releases like this underground jet of lava that shoots fire up and traps Ymir in a ring of fire, which he can never escape because he's made of ice. It will melt.
Uh-huh.
And so Odin returns to his throne in Asgard, where he waits for next issue, where he will face Surtur, the fire demon. And that's the end. It's a 5-page story.
Yeah. Well, I'll say what I said the last time. I like the fact that they're including this in the comic, like a little bit of Norse mythology. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I enjoy basically the entire Tales of Asgard run. This is another 3 stars. It would be really hard for a 5-pager to get much above that. Because yeah,
that's fair.
There's not a lot of story you can fit in 5-page, but the art is great, and it's cool that they're touching on, like, at this point, actual Norse mythology.
Yeah, I gave this 3 stars, but I gave the first one four stars. I this was still good. I just didn't enjoy it as much as the first one, but I mean, who cares, really? It's 5 pages. They're still good. We'll have plenty more of these, and a lot. This is probably my least favorite that I've read so far, but it's still really good nonetheless. That's pretty much all I have to say.
Yeah, we're already coming to the end of the, like, pure Norse mythology section, because there's Surtur next issue, and then I think it starts switching to Tales of Young Thor.
They switch between Tales of Young Thor and other characters, and we kind of get a little character bio type deal too.
Yeah, it's really good the way they do that, because it really helps Thor's supporting cast, because then in the main comic they can bring in a lot of the other gods and stuff, and you know who they are from these little vignettes.
Yeah. No, it's not bad. Like, you know, of all the things they could have put in to fill, this was a good fill in my mind. I mean, that gets a 3 stars just because it is a nice way to fill 5 pages if you've got them to kind of flesh out instead of reprinting a story from like 10 years or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Anyways,
yeah.
On we move to the main event, which I somehow left in Dan's hands again.
For the second time.
Tales of Suspense number 47, Iron Man Battles the Melter. This is by Stan Lee, and Steve Ditko is the artist on this one. Yes, he is. This one,
yeah,
and the
this
next
is
one.
Ditko.
Nice. I like his art on Iron Man, but it is kind of off-putting sometimes how skinny he can draw Iron Man. Don Heck does the inks here. Jack Kirby and Sol Brodsky are on the cover, and Sam Rosen's on letters. August 1963 release. This is another 18-pager. Iron Man has been getting some extra pages recently, and this one goes to Dan.
Okay. Yeah. Iron Man battles the Melter. Man, were they struggling for a name for this guy. Wow.
I mean, it's pretty evocative of his power.
He shockingly works as a villain here.
Okay. So his name is...
At least that's my take.
Bruno Horgan, one of Anthony Stark's former competitors, is on a rampage as the Melter. The Melter has been sabotaging Stark's weapons, embarrassing him in front of his military customers during an unveiling ceremony. While checking his inventory, Stark is ambushed and knocked unconscious by the Melter. As he stands over Stark's unconscious body, he reflects on how he became the Melter. Bruno Horgan, are we going for a flashback already?
Yep.
Good Lord. Okay, yeah, we let's do this.
They're trying some unconventional storytelling here.
They are. This is interesting. Bruno Horgan was once a competitor of Stark Industries, who was bankrupted when Stark turned in a report to the Pentagon showing that Horgan was doing substandard work on his defense projects. While overseeing the disassembly of his factory, Horgan discovered malfunctioning inspection device that produced a beam capable of melting iron. He reconfigured this device into a melting beam weapon and created the identity of the Melter in order to get revenge against his enemies, including Tony Stark. The Melter leaves the unconscious Stank behind and continues with his business of sabotage. Ooh, scary. Happy Hogan finds the unconscious Stark and takes him back to his office. Once in private, Stark plugs in his chest plate and convalesces. Okay, that's fair. Meanwhile, the Melter is running loose in Stark's manufacturing facility. As the Melter is focusing on a large generator, Iron Man appears on the scene. Melter turns his melting beam onto Iron Man's armor and completely melts off the armor's left arm, thus destroying the skin underneath because it's just been covered by molten metal. Fearing damage to his chest plate, Iron Man hastily retreats, using his armor's magnets to break open a steam pipe to drive the villain away. Okay. Later, Stark Later, Stark focuses his attention on repairing the damage caused by the melter. He is called to Washington, D.C. with his badly burnt arm, where he has to explain to the members of the Defense Appropriation Committee, wow, say that three times fast, that he has been unable to deliver a reliable product due to the acts of sabotage perpetrated by the melter. Several of the senators even doubt the existence of the melter. Back at Stark Industries, Iron Man assists the repair crews by clearing away the wreckage left by the melter. He is resolved to take the fight to the villain so he can get his life back. While he is working, the melter spots him and decides to wage his final assault against Iron Man. He walks up to Iron Man, completely melts a large chunk of scrap metal he is holding over his head, covering him with molten metal, which Iron Man clears away using his jet blowers. Okay. The melter turns his beam onto Iron Man once again, this time with no effect. The astonished melter then melts through a crane that is holding a large boulder above a crowd of bystanders that includes Happy Hogan and Pepper Potts. Iron Man saves the crowd from the falling boulder, then pursues the fleeing melter. After a brief showdown, the melter melts a hole on through the floor and escapes into the currents of an underground sewer system. That's a shitty way to leave.
For fuck's sake.
What?
Just like that, I regret giving the end of the story.
Iron Man reveals that he tricked the melter. Really? We had no idea. You tricked him? Gosh, Rooney, I wonder how. He had redesigned the armor he was wearing, making it tough extruded aluminum so that it was immune to the melter's melting ray.
And Aluminum that, Man!
That is the end of the story. Thank God. Okay, first of all, what, super lame bad guy? Like, seriously? What a bad guy.
Reading it, it kind of works, at least for this issue.
You say so.
He's not a villain I'd want to see return, but he was fine for a one-off.
Stories.
Unfortunately, he's not a one-off.
Oh.
Yeah, you could argue if he was a one-off, he'd be incredible.
But, I mean, the story's just a standard good guy versus bad guy. Bad guy has powers, good guy reinvents himself to beat him by negating his ability to be a bad guy with his powers. And
I don't know, it just helps that Iron Man is very fun to read right now ever since he's gotten the supporting cast.
Okay, and you're right, I like Iron Man. A lot of what they do with him is a lot of fun, but this is pretty lame story. I'm sorry, this story was not that good. How did this become our main event?
Because it's based on just the number of comics we try to get on, not trying to end it the best one.
Okay, yeah. Clearly, yeah. This, we ended with a thud instead of a bang.
I didn't want Giant Man's debut in the same episode as Lizard. Okay, and that's other stuff.
So. Yeah, because the Lizard again.
With the number of longer comics we're covering too, seven would just, it would be a slog to get through.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this one was a 3-star story. For me, it really only had one pretty major failing, and that was Melter's motivations. He's invented an beam that can melt iron, which, according to the writers of this story, basically everything is made out of. And he's established to have had contacts with the military. If he didn't waste all his time on being a D-list supervillain, he could have made billions selling that ray to the government as a weapon and retired.
Yep, He could have. But no. Join us next week when we say, the what?
Join us next week when a new title debuts for Marvel called Aluminum Man.
Well, I'm sorry, but if he's melting his armor, then Iron Man's arm would have been covered in molten metal. I'm sorry. He's not disintegrating his armor. He's melting it.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a heat-based melting. It's weird comic book super science.
It only melts the specific compound chemical shit is what they're going for.
Right. Yeah,
that's how science works.
There's nothing you guys can say.
That's how science works, right?
Oh, totally. There's literally nothing you guys can say that's gonna solve that little plot hole.
I'm just telling you what they're going for. They don't do a good job of it.
Let me call your attention back to what I said earlier in this issue.
What, Dan's an asshole?
If I was going to dock, yes, but also if I was going to start docking comics for Stan not understanding science, this is going to be a very long order.
Okay, yes, that is fair. But this is a little bit... Normally, like, I can live with 90% of the stupidity that happens. I can. But this one, no.
I think really what they mean is they're liquefying the iron without...
They're changing the chemical structure of the armor, turning it from a solid to a liquid.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're not melting it in the sense that they're heating it to the point that it changes properties naturally.
Uh-huh. Sorry, still not buying it.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible science.
It really is horrible.
1960s comics are full of terrible science.
Okay, but can I point out something? Just for the sake.
Absolutely. You're going to anyway.
You're fucking right, I am. And you sit down and shut up, because here we go. While Iron Man is fixing his factory... He's holding a chunk of scrap metal over his head. And when Melter comes along, he melts it, covering him in, and I quote, molten metal.
Yep.
So.
Because Stan doesn't know what that word means.
Yeah, kind of difference between, like, say, lava and magma, right?
Yeah. Stan just thinks it means liquid. That's fairly apparent.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, your explanations all fall apart with the word molten.
Oh, believe me, I saw that when I was reading it. I just, the entire way the story is presented, it's very obvious that he doesn't intend for it to be adding heat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I just... I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm not arguing with you in like trying to claim that this is good science. It's just.
I'm hurt and I'm old and I'm fucking tired and I work with fucking children.
I'm old and I'm fucking tired and I work with fucking children. That's right. I say that 10 times a day. While we're working up
especially on podcasting.
Podcast day. Yeah, especially on podcasting. you know what? And I hate myself for saying this, but Spider-Man had the best villain this week.
Let's go. Small factories.
Yeah, take it. It's all you're getting.
Next week, Spider-Man will have the best villain again.
Well,
yeah, that's not going to be hard next week.
You know, it's not.
Right.
So, speaking of next week, let's run down what we're covering next week now. We're going to open up next week with, I said next week a lot, Tales to Astonish number 49, which introduces us to Giant Ant-Man.
Ooh, Giant Ant-Man.
Yep. Avengers number 2. I forget the villain's name. It doesn't really matter.
Space Phantom.
You didn't have to tell me.
yes, I did.
We have Amazing Spider-Man issue.
I was feeling a little decisive there, Bill.
We have Amazing.
I didn't know it. So do you.
Amazing Spider-Man issue number 7. As we see the return of Dan, I mean the Vulture, Sergeant
SpongeBob.
Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos issue number 4, the most important issue so far, the best issue so far. Can't wait for Bill to hopefully enjoy it as much as I did. Strange Tales issue number 115, the A story, which sees Johnny Storm do something. Oh, he faces the Sandman. This is actually a good one.
Yeah, there's actually two strong villains in this week.
There is. And then we have Strange Tales number 115 B story, which is Doctor Strange doing something. What's he doing this time?
It's his origin story.
It's good. The origin, yes.
Good, finally, something worth
actually pretty
reading.
Decent.
Yeah. That's the point when they decided they were making Strange a permanent fixture, and so they actually had to have a reason why he could do what he could do.
It's actually a really good week once we get past Avengers.
Yeah. And that Avengers is historically important.
The Avengers is actually pretty good. It's really the only bad thing here is Ant-Man, Giant Man.
Yeah, Avengers is good.
Uh-huh.
Underwhelming villain, but that's not really the point of that Avengers.
Yeah.
And everything else is pretty solid.
Yeah, no, that's actually a pretty good week, so make sure you tune in. I'm very excited to talk about this Sergeant Fury issue. Amazing Spider-Man's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. Ant-Man's going to be fun to talk about just because of...
He's lying.
It's
because
important.
Of some stuff. And then, actually, both Strange... Probably the least fun one to talk about will be Avengers, because it's going to be a lot of muddling through, but... It should still be pretty
Avengers
decent.
Yeah, Avengers is going to suck to summarize.
Should still be all right.
The story's good, but it's going to suck to summarize just because of Space Phantom's power.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. So yeah, tune in next week. If you missed last week's episode, pretty good. Go check that out. Check out the MCU discussion as well. Also, check out my main channel, RJ Epic One. I should have plugged that last week, too. I just started a new series, wrestling booking series on Journey of Wrestling. So go check that out. But yeah, if you're on YouTube, like, subscribe, comment, even share if you'd like to. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. If you're on Spotify, click which of these stories was your favorites in the poll. And we will see you all later, and have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one, everyone.